Yeah, it just goes like that.
Dude, that was amazing, by the way.
That was really good.
Oh, it's a 1970s song.
That's the intro now. I'm going to keep it in.
That's nice.
I'm going to do it. No.
Hi. So I'm Mummy Imperfect, also known as Weena, and you are listening to The Sisterhood on Mummy Imperfect, the podcast which brings together women to share experiences, inspire each other, have a laugh, get a few things off your backs. And then today, the two women that I'm bringing together are my little sister Indra and my little sister-in-law, big sister-in-law, little sister-in-law, Akosia. So you're in the same country for a change, because we've been trying to do this for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah.
And the time zones just never work out. So usually, Akosia, you're in Ghana, aren't you? And
yeah.
Indra is in India. And I'm going to be talking about a bit more about that journey to move back home, as it were. But first, as I normally do, I want to just talk about a couple of stories that caught my eye in the week. And the first one is about Instagram. So basically, singer and actress Selena Gomez says that she deleted Instagram from her phone because it made her feel depressed. And she said that social media negatively affected her self-esteem, and it would make her feel, in her own words, it would make me feel not good about myself and look at my body differently. And she said that despite having more than 152 million Instagram followers, she doesn't go on it much now, and she doesn't even have the password anymore. Her assistant is in charge of it, and she posts all her pictures on it as well. So I don't know what you think about this. I'm just going to say my little piece first, that I am quite new to Instagram. So I only went on it for the first time a few months ago because I didn't want to have another thing to maintain, and as well as Facebook and Twitter and stuff.
Oh,
so
Instagram now, Reen.
Yeah, I'm on it now. And so first I was like, oh, I really like this. I see the point of this and I really like it. And then I've actually deleted it off my phone as well now. I've deleted it off my phone. I still go on it now and again, but I want to use it more as a tool to kind of share information or publicize what I'm doing or see good information from other places. However, I as a mum of three, like Selena Gomez is 26, right? I'm 40 and I'm a mum of three. I still felt I got FOMO from it because I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I feel inspired. People are doing all these things. But also it's like, for example, you know, you want to go to all these things. Me, I am kind of tied to the house in some ways at the moment. So I'm like, oh, I should be doing this. I should be doing more of that. Why am I not doing it? And also just like some mums sharing things like, I'm just watching my children love each other fruit of my wounds. And I'm like, I'm watching my children kill each other and tell me that they hate me from the morning and I've been screaming at them. So what life are you leading? And then, and the same people, you know, apparently like they actually suffer a lot from anxiety. You would never know this. It's just from talking to other people. And so I'm just like, you know what? Bye. Shut that down for a bit.
Yeah. I think I'm one of those people who I'm a very perspective person. So like a knife, right? You can use a knife to start a life. You can use a knife to end a life. Mm-hmm. And I think social media is like that. You can you can use it to really uplift yourself, or you could use it to end up feeling depressed. And I think a lot of it's to do with like who you're following, what you're watching. Mm-hmm. So you can really tailor it to your own needs. But saying that, even being one of the most positive people with no kids, with all the time in the world, I still have that little bit of FOMO feeling that you're talking about. I think that just social media does that to us just naturally. And it's, you know, it's about perspective. I think I've kind of, I admire people that are able to do that, to notice when this is getting too much and I want to remove it from my life because of, you know, yourself, your self-well-being is most important. But I just try to manage it like I do with television. You know, I turned off my TV years ago. So for me, I just try to manage it in a way whereby I'm just not on there as much. So I don't feel it. I'm aware, though, for example, Twitter, similarly, is there for conversation. Right? Yeah. So when you do become that person who only pops on to advertise something and then pop off, then it's kind of like it's not really doing the job, right? So it's about finding that balance ultimately. But, yeah, I mean, I don't blame her. And it's unfortunate that people feel that way, because sometimes it's not even people coming at you that makes you feel like that. It's just you looking and feeling within yourself like you're missing out on something.
What do you think?
I agree. I mean, it is, as you say, I mean, it can be used for amazing productive things. I mean, as a personally myself, as 27 year old the artist, I'm on Instagram to try and, you know, be inspired by other people's work, and to put my own work out there as well. So images of like my performance art and like different art works that I've made and so on. Admittedly, I do also go on there to look at like fashion pages and things like that. So just purely sort of like, you know, indulging in like kind of superficiality. Yeah. Like I do enjoy that as well. But yeah, it really is something I think to be conscious and aware of the potential kind of dangers of it is really helpful to do. I mean, I recently just wrote a paper about, as part of my master's, I wrote a paper about the relationship between different social media platforms and eating disorder. And it, you know, and sure, I was focusing on eating disorder in particular, but any kind of potential for unhealthy behavioral patterns and unhealthy thought patterns that we have, I think social media can, it always has like the kind of possibility to exacerbate that if we're not aware about, you know, the pros and cons of it. So yeah, I mean, I've got a very similar perspective to you, really. I think it can be used as a really good tool for upliftment, but also, yeah, it's healthy to keep a check on the way that you're using it and the amount of screen time that, you know, is having an effect on your life as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and just like carrying on with the whole screen time and actually talking to people thing. So the next thing I want to talk about is talking to strangers. So this is another story that I saw this week. So obviously growing up, we were always told don't speak to strangers. But the BBC recently published a piece of research that suggests that we may often underestimate the positive impact of connecting with others for both our own and others' well-being. So, for example, having a conversation with a stranger on your way to work might leave you both feeling happier than you would think. And I actually do it all the time. I do it all the time. Obviously, I look out for warning signs of obvious dodginess.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think we now know what is people are like who are psychos and not, right? And obviously, you don't trust a stranger with your life and whatever. But I do it all the time. And then sometimes it's like I see those strangers again. And then sometimes they become friends. Like, see, honestly, no, seriously, like this, even like on the school run, like I have random friends who they take their kids to school in the opposite direction and just struck up a conversation one day. Like, I think I was pregnant, and this guy was like, "Sister, you've been pregnant for ages, haven't you? You've been seeing me every day." And it's like, you know, it's so honest because it's like you do see people every day, the same people. And he was like, "I've been seeing you every day, sister. You're right. When are you going to have this baby?" And then from there, like, literally, we have...
You were quite big, weren't you, when you were pregnant?
Yeah, I was. And I used to walk to school every day, like, with the kids. And then from then, we actually know random little things about each other from taking our kids to school in the opposite direction, from talking in the street to just random little conversations.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's quite nice, really.
Yeah. Similar things like that in India. I mean, with the there's a salon that I go to that's just underneath where I live, like in the same building, and I go in there and we have little conversations about, you know, just random things about life as they're waxing my legs, you know. And it's that you do build up like small you know, relationships, and you know, it does like really uplift you, I find, especially if you're new to a place and you strike up small conversations with people. And it helps you to not feel so alien and all that. And it's nice. But I think we were talking about social media before. And I think with social media, the thing is that there's no like direct like off time. It's like a 24-hour thing. So I mean, I prefer having them conversations in real life sometimes, because it's, you know, a part of your day. And it's like a bit, social media is a bit different with that. It's never completely like switched off. So personally, I always find that a bit, like a little bit stressful at times, you know, when it comes to replying to people. And I do a lot of freelance work as well, and social media has enabled like people that I'm doing different bits of work for to contact me at like 12 o'clock at night when I'm in bed. Like,
feel like it's acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, they might be a night owl, but I'm trying to go sleep. It's like, can you not?
Exactly. I know.
Me, you know me, I'm a stranger lover. But it's I think because of having a communications as my you know, as my background and as the work that I do, you know, I don't see, I'm a stranger, right? So we talk about speaking to strangers, but then people also speaking to us. I love human contact. I've done it from when I was very, very young, you know, interviewed strangers and I had some fascinating stories come out of them. So I think I look beyond a person's persona. It's very British, I think, that whole thing of getting on the train, don't look me in the eye, don't smile at me, let's just go where we're going. And I think being in Ghana is similar to you in India. It's like, you know, nobody's really a stranger. Like everybody is very, there's a much more of a communal spirit in Ghana. And, you know, I've definitely sparked up some amazing relationships from just having a conversation with someone who happens to be sitting next to me, you know, in a cafe.
Like, your stories, her stories, I'm telling you, of talking to strangers,
they're amazing. They
are absolutely just, you can write this stuff,
they're like, great. I love it. I think that's, you know, we're all just humans, and sometimes, you know, people who, and you know what you're saying here, like you kind of try and avoid those who look a bit crazy. And I realised that even the most sane ones are also crazy. Looking ones.
I know.
So I think it's just lovely for everybody to speak to somebody. And sometimes you speak to somebody who may really have needed that conversation. Yeah. So I'm a real big believer in like the whole universe bringing people together at the right time. And so sometimes someone gives me, you know, that one sentence that I needed to hear, right? Based on whatever I've been dealing with that week or that month. Mm-hmm. And how uplifting is that? So sometimes I think we can look at it in a whole completely different way and just look at the fact that we're all sort of brothers and sisters and connected in one way.
Totally.
And we should actually try and reach out to each other a bit more. Ghana's taught me to be so much more like that.
Has it?
So much more like that, yeah.
So, yeah, Colleen?
Yeah, like, with me, being in India almost makes... Because I used to be quite a shy person.
Mm-hmm.
But being in a new environment does, you know, really... push you to, you know, get out of your comfort zone. And just because you don't want to feel isolated, you don't have that comfort of the familiarity of the people you know around you and all that, so yeah, like it does push you to you know, speak to more people and to just open, you know, your social circle more and things like that. And also strangely, like the language barrier, it's like almost being not able to speak to people so easily made me feel that I wanted to do it more, because when you have the potential to feel more isolated, it's like, right, how can I get out there more and actually, you know, connect with people and not feel isolated? Because that used to scare me quite a bit, you know, the language difference, because being in India and looking like an Indian person, like
you are Indian.
Well, yeah, for people who are, I know, but I mean, looking like a Hindi speaker perhaps, like,
Yeah.
I guess the language barrier becomes more exacerbated because people won't make an effort to speak to you in English as much, which now I appreciate because it helped me to learn the language like a lot quicker. And now I'm fine. But I remember at the start, it really wanted, you know, I really wanted to push myself to be able to speak to people and to try a lot more and stuff. So, yeah, like, and as you were saying, Kusya, I think same in India, people are more just open to talk to each other and to have conversations, and asking about the other person's life isn't as much of a faux pas as it might seem in this country sometimes. Nice. It takes a bit of getting used to, but it's good, I think.
Do you think they're more direct as well, like?
Yeah, definitely.
Very.
Yeah. No, honestly, very, like, yeah. Just the whole way about, like, oh, you married then, or single or married, and
back these days and stuff like that.
Yeah, they'll tell you how you're looking. They'll tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
You know, or they'll ask you, depending on what you know what the circumstance is, but they'll dive straight deep into your
In Ghana?
Yeah, straight into it, straight into it. Yeah. So where's your husband then? You know, you don't have a husband? Why not? Okay, really? Okay. So what about in the UK? You have one there? And then you find yourself, you can do it back. So I actually like playing the game backwards.
Yeah, okay.
And say, you know, so what about you? Are you married? What happened there? Okay. So it's, and it just becomes a bit of a nice, a bit of a joke, really.
Well, that's how you get to know each other, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning, right, with where you guys are now. So basically, right, how long have you been in India now for? Two years?
2.5 years.
Okay, and Kos, you've been in Ghana for
About four.
Oh my god.
Yeah, three or four. But you know, coming and going. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. She's there. Ian's there more, I guess, aren't you? Like, you don't come and going as much.
I'd say my permanent address is there, like nowadays. Yeah.
And yours is in Ghana now.
Yeah, I think my default address is now, for the past 2 years, has been in Ghana. I'd
okay. Say, like, all right. So solidly. So with you first, Ian, like, just what led you to think, okay, I'm going to go try and live in India and work in India? Like, what made you make the move to your motherland?
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't even plan on doing it, to be honest. I went there originally for 2 months because I just wanted like an extended time of being there and spending time with the family, and I was doing a little bit of voluntary work in a school as well in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then very soon after I arrived in the country, I came across the company that I used to work for, which was a company called Art Consult, like a gallery in New Delhi, and a magazine called Art and Deal. So I was basically at this art festival and I came across their stall there and I got talking to them and I just emailed them about the job vacancy that they had. And then, yeah, went for an interview, got the job, and then I extended my stay to 6 months because I thought, okay, they had me on a 6 month trial period. And then I think 3 months after that, my boss offered me a permanent contract. And I just thought, you know what, this job is probably one of the best things that that ever happened to me, to be honest. Like, I've finally got a full-time job working in the art sector. It's going good. It's interesting, like challenging as well, being in a different environment. But I thought it's a challenge that I'm ready to embrace and to tackle head on. So, yeah, then I just like cancelled my plane ticket eventually. Oh, well, no, I didn't cancel it. I just like extended it so I could come back and visit for like a couple of weeks that summer, and then went straight back, and I'm still there. So I never really planned it. It's just like a happy accident. And you know, now I'm like quite settled there. Like, I live with my partner over there and I'm doing my master's now. I don't actually work full time anymore. So yeah, just one thing led to another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what about you, Cos?
Yeah, it's like that. It's like it's a stepping stone journey, right? You don't kind of make this big announcement that I'm going to Ghana and then everything is all in place and then you go. For me, it started actually the journey in 2012 when my mum died really, really suddenly. And then I had this sort of year-long search within myself and all of that. And then by 2013, I'd kind of said, you know, I want to kind of be going back home more often. And I did. I just traveled there once or twice. And a few friends around me were saying, like, you should go to Ghana. It's like, it's popping. It's starting to really take off. But I weren't really taking much notice. I was very much in my feelings. But then I started to, like, investigate. I was already in the communications industry, as I was saying, like, as a media journalist and also running a PR company. But that break of not being, of my mum's death kind of meant that I had this time to really just look within and just, and I prayed a lot, just kind of going, what do I want to do? Like, I knew I didn't want to go back to what I was doing before.
Yeah.
And London felt like I'd hit a bit of a glass ceiling a little bit. And I was getting a little bit bored. I didn't really want to do the BBC route. I didn't really want to kind of just carry on doing what I was doing prior to my mum's passing. And then what happened was I started attending any event that was based in London but had an Africa focus, and started meeting with people who were going back and forth. And then I just started changing my circle a little bit in that sense. And then I went to this workshop with this girl that I know who said she was in a workshop called How to Relocate. And then it was at that workshop in 2013 when I was like, I'm going back to, I don't know how, I even got enough money to buy a ticket, but I'm going back to Ghana. So once that seed got planted, that's when I started coming up with like ideas of what to do. And eventually I came up with this concept of running a communications company to promote and connect the investment and business and tech community in Ghana with the UK. Then just started going back and forth. But very early on, by the time 2014, 2015 came, I'd been two or three times for a month here and there. And then 2015 came and then I fell in love. And that kind of escalated the situation very quickly because then I was like, this is God's just sorted me right out. So, you know, there was about an 8-month gap, like long distance relationship thing of me really setting up my company and really thinking about my website and really, like, my energy was so high all the way through 2015. So by the end of 2015, I was good to go. And then literally once I landed in Ghana and started spending more time there, it just started building and building. It seemed like the industry wanted me there. It seemed like there was opportunities there. I started meeting the right people, and it just kind of escalated really from that moment.
Okay. So, and was there like, so there was no kind of sense of like, oh, I want to go back to my roots and, you know, find myself and this is my history and my culture?
After some time, yes. When I got there, I don't know how you feel, but after you've been there for a little while, do you start to really get a sense of self? Like, oh my God, this is us.
I've been to India before. Like, of course, like we've been quite a few times. And yeah. I think the last couple of times that I went there, I kind of had this pipe dream of, oh yeah, it'd be great if I could just move there. I love it so much and all that. But it was never like a real serious like thought. You know, but yeah, sure. Like I did sort of, because I think as like someone of Indian origin living in like Britain, you always have this sense of like, you know, this is your culture like in England, but at the same time, there's like this complete other part of your culture that you'd just love to explore and get to know a lot more. Mm. So yeah, of course there was that. And yeah, that has happened as well, like, and in a completely unexpected way in some, like, in some sense, because I think I've been there for long enough now that I can have a real, like, critical perspective on the society that I'm living in, mm-hmm. but in a positive way, because, you know, when you live in a place and you're invested in a place, to critically look at, like, society is the first step to, like, doing something useful in that society as well.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at the moment. And I always do feel torn between here and India because, I mean, now I'm back in England for a couple of months. And it's really weird. It's like, yeah, this is my home in one sense in England, but I really miss being in India as well.
Yeah. It's funny. I completely relate to what you're saying because, you know, 30 odd years or in your case 20 odd years, you know, in one place for so, and you've got relationships, you've got your kind of the culture, the British culture, and I love, like, I'm a proud Londoner, like I love being here, an East Londoner at that. So there's a very there is a community that you leave behind when you go. People think you're kind of swanning off into the sunset, but it's quite painful at some point to think of me not seeing my nieces, my nephews growing up, or not having our, you know, look how close we used to be, like our little runs
used to go on.
And it's a really a sever, and I try and sort of I brush over it in a way, and I'll be like, oh, I'm back soon, but it really has an impact, right, on your relationship. So there is that, but then the other part of you is like, I'm at the beginning of a whole other journey. Which is also part of me. So it's almost like you want to equally, you know, the UK had 30 years of me, but I feel like I've got another, you know, a whole other life to learn. So I feel like maybe 5-10 years have gone by, then I can find a real balance between the two. Because once you go into that new world, it's like, well, for me anyway, it feels like I've got so much, I don't know, relationship building to do and understanding of who I am to do, and I can't even speak the language. So,
but in, you know, like just going back to that thing of like, okay, you went and like you said in that, like obviously, you know, we're Indian and you knew a Punjabi, but you weren't like so fluent, and Hindi you weren't fluent, and so language was a thing for you, and language of course was a thing for you as well, because I know that you weren't fluent either. So talking about like loneliness and isolation and things like what did the language barrier mean for you guys?
I just want to say something about that. I think it really positively challenged me in a lot of ways, because I know when I left the country, I was just in, I mean, our grandmother had passed away not long before, and like I was kind of like professionally like not, you know, I was just doing two different jobs and in two different cities, and it was just all a bit, you know, of a difficult time. And then going to India and experiencing that isolation, it was a good 6 months where I didn't really have any friends. I was just going to work, focusing on work, experiencing the language barrier, trying my best with it and coming home. And it forced me to spend so much time within myself. Like, it forced me to spend time with myself. There was no, like, external, like, escape routes that I used to have, like, oh, you can go and meet up with this group of people, or you can go and do this and that. There was none of that. I didn't know anything, really. So that was really good for me. And I think more than discovering the culture and more than any of that, just being forced to spend time with myself just helped me to discover, like, and to reconnect with, like, what was going on within myself. Like, and I found that before I used to, like, busy myself unnecessarily, but now, like, I feel because of that experience for that amount of time, like, and then evolving from that, like, I'm more, like, focused. I'm so much more focused. Like, nowadays, like, yeah, like, I'm doing productive things in a way that's a lot more, like, beneficial to me than I used to have before. So, yeah.
Good vibes. The language barrier for me was, before I left, I actually paid 600 and something pounds to go to Ghana language school.
I remember that.
And,
gosh,
you know, it just was a complete waste of money. But I got to Ghana and then I was just trying to remember what I learned. It just was ridiculous. But what was nice was hearing people talk, and I don't know how, and I think this is growing up in the house, I knew what they were saying.
Yeah.
But I just could not say stuff back. Mm. And I can't, you know, and I'm quite a quirky person. Like, I like to be a bit sarcastic. I like a bit of a joke. So I don't want to just learn the language. I want to learn the language and I want to play with it.
Yeah.
And that was missing. Like, I am, everybody speaks English. Most people speak English in Ghana. And they're able to communicate in English. But then once, you know, there's a conversation between two local Ghanaians, you can see there's a different kind of energy that you're not part of. And I'm faced with that every single day. And I used to just think, wow, man, what are they saying? Or like, how can I chip into this?
But I think you have to know a language quite well for you to make jokes in that language. Show a bit of humor in a language, I think you're like, yeah, I know this quite well now.
I know. And
you're there, actually.
You're there. You are there.
Like, the home that I live in now.
She's fluent now. I would say you're fluent now.
Well, I'm not that well. I make a lot of grammatical mistakes in that. But yeah, you know, like, where I live now, like, well, it's just everyone just speaks Hindi. I live with my partner and our friend, and they speak Hindi to each other and with me. So it's like
all the time.
Yeah, all the time. Like, I mean,
I think she's missing. Yeah. And because, like, when you go to Kumasi, where my dad lives, they speak it all the time. Within like a week or 10 days, it will start to come out my mouth. But in Accra, it's English most of the time. So I think that's why. I mean, I try and tell people to do that. They haven't got the patience. Do they have the patience with you when you understand?
I mean, I speak quite slow. Like, I speak, you can definitely tell that Hindi is not my first language and that I'm like from a different like place. A lot of people assume that I'm from like South India, which is quite cool, because they their first language is not Hindi. Like, it's not, you know. But I do speak it a bit slower and you can tell that I'm not from Delhi, but that's fine, to be honest, because most of the people in Delhi are migrants there anyway.
Just a bit of background, right, for you, Cos, and then and anyone else who's listening, is basically the language thing. Like, we were out with our sisters. I think I was most in that world of speaking Punjabi. Then also I could speak Hindi, but my Hindi's not great. But I can speak it. It's not great. But Punjabi is good, and
that's because your Punjabi's great.
Punjabi, like, people I've spoken to who are from Punjab, they just come here recently, say to me, when did you get here? And I'm like, I was born and brought up here. So I take that as a compliment. But that's because I spent a lot of time with my grandma and she didn't speak English, right? And then my middle sister, Ritu, she spent a bit less time, but then, and I think her Punjabi's all right, but I guess she's not as confident as I am. And then with Ian, she, like, I think your understanding was quite good of Punjabi and you could speak it, but it wasn't fluent, let's say.
I tell you what, after Bibi passed away, I mean, after our grandma passed away, I just stopped speaking it, like, altogether. Because with our grandmother, she used to speak in Punjabi all the time, and I used to speak like kind of half in English and half in Punjabi because she could understand English. And to be honest, that's still how I communicate in Hindi. Like, I'll say some things in English and some of it in Hindi, and it's like mixed. But that's, you know.
But people in Delhi, do that.
Yeah,
a lot,
people do that a lot anyway. So
they will, like, the educated people in Delhi will mix English and Hindi a lot, and also with Hindi because it's similar to Punjabi. But I think I watched a lot of Bollywood growing up, like a lot. So my understanding of Hindi was very good, and because we kept going back to India as kids, obviously I was older than I'm 13 years older than Ian, and then I was obviously more aware of Hindi and speaking Hindi to people and stuff, whereas she was a lot younger, and you know, so I think that's where I was a bit
and
more...
I don't like Bollywood that much, to be honest. I love like crappy horror movies and stuff like that. I don't watch Bollywood really. I only watch it when like the two guys that I live with, like my partner and our friend, like when they're watching it, I'll watch it with them, but because the films are so long, I end up going to bed early anyway and not even like finishing the film.
I'm still in the middle of watching one.
Yeah, she's in the middle of, because she could be gone, forced by the children to watch it, and she hasn't finished it yet.
There's some really good movies, to be honest, but yeah, I mean, you've got to set aside like some serious time.
Half a year, mate.
So you know, like, do you feel like you fit in? You feel like you fit in there now? Like, do you cross? Hang on, one second. I'm gonna get issues with this one.
Do I feel like I fit in? I feel like I fit in I suppose in my circle of in my own sort of world. But I've never been a fit in person. I feel more settled. I think it's better to say it that way. I definitely feel much more settled and more accepting of my position in the country. But yeah, fit in, because I'm not sure what I'm fitting into. It's so dynamic. You know, depends on where you are, what day of the week it is, etc. It will depend on, you know, how in you feel, right? Or where you are.
I don't know if this is the same in Ghana, costs, but in where I am in, like, where I used to work in South Delhi, there was a lot of like quite trendy like people, you know, like quite like middle class young people that look quite, you know, just trendy and that. And I felt there like people didn't really stare as much, because I'm sure you've heard this before, but in India, like, staring, you know, like in England, you get told like from a really young age that it's rude to stare, like don't stare at people.
Yeah.
People quite like readily and openly just like stare.
they don't look away.
Oh, really?
Like, here, if someone's staring at you here and you look back at them, they'll quickly pretend they're not staring and look away. There, they will continue staring, and you will be the one to look away because you'll feel so awkward.
You won't win that staring contest.
Wow. Men and women, and it's like, oh god, okay, this is my eyes are watering now, I'm gonna look away.
Like, they won't say anything, they'll just look.
No, just look.
Yeah, just, it's quite like, I mean, I ignore it now, but it depends how I'm feeling that particular day. Like, it won't bother me most of the time, but sometimes I'll, oh, don't know. But yeah, but then where I live, like, I live on the outskirts of Delhi, like between the Delhi and UP border. And that neighbourhood is completely different. So when I'm walking around there, it's like me and my partner both, really, because he's got quite long hair and he had his nose pierced. And like I like have like a couple of nose piercings and like colourful hair and stuff. Like, you get a lot of stares and stuff. Then I feel like, you know, when you actually have conversations with people and start to get to know people, and then they realise that you are just like a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes like, normalized. That's a lovely like thing. But yeah, I mean, in terms of fitting in, I relate to what you were saying, where, yeah, like, I think with what I'm doing with my education and like what I'm trying to do professionally, like, absolutely, I feel like I do have space to do what I want to do there. That's why I'm there. Like, you know, I feel fine. But I think socially, and, you know, it's just important to remember, like, to be proud of who you are in yourself, and it's not so important to fit in all the time. I mean, even in England, like,
that's true.
It's all about whether you fit in, and
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the people that we are, just the fact that we had that vision to kind of step out of the norm of what most people in the UK are doing and actually go, you know, back home, so to speak. And I think that in itself just shows you that we're not kind of fit in people. We're not going there to fit in. Like, we're just
definitely
finding, you know, we're just actually just, I suppose, carving our own paths in a sense, and people will eventually fit into our world. Like, because one thing I've noticed about being in Ghana is that people also learn a lot from me coming from the UK and wanting to understand why I did that when everybody wants to really get out to London. And then being able to give some perspective about, you know, the differences between where we're staying, and then to build relationships and share knowledge and, you know, share jokes and all of that kind of thing, and really actually inspire others as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's, yeah, it's a nice feeling to be able to contribute and actually bring value to the room when you're there.
Absolutely. And it's all about making connections, and, you know, it helps the world to kind of feel like a place that's not so, like,
rigid.
Different and rigid, yeah. So, yeah, it's good. And it is all about, like, making connections and making, you know, if you ever have a feeling that you feel quite alien to a place, just pushing yourself to make those connections and have conversations will always make it better.
Yeah.
But you know what you said about that? People from countries in Africa and, like, you know, from India, like, they want to, a lot of people want to emigrate to the UK. It's like, the UK is where we want to be. And that's why it is quite unusual with you guys who are born and brought up in the UK going back to, you know, India and Ghana. And it's like, that's why I wanted to talk to you guys, because it's not, you don't hear that of many people doing that.
No.
So, but to other people who would want to do that, who feel like, oh, I've got some connection with my mother country and I want to go, I want to give back, or I want to explore what options are there, like, what advice would you guys give to them?
I'd say just try it. Just, you know, I mean, it's not going to be for everybody. I mean, I can imagine that maybe some people would, like, try and, like, make the move, realize they don't like it, and that's fine as well, but you never know until you try.
Yeah, you know. I mean, don't romanticize it. I think have a why, like, have a why besides I would like to try it. I think both of us have a bit of a story that comes with the reason why we ended up there, and so therefore, when times do get tough, or when the lights do go off, or when, you know, internet is slow, you it's not a thing where, oh, I've been back in London. It's just part and parcel of why you're there. So your purpose of being there, I think, has got to be stronger than, you know, the ideology or this idealistic idea of going back. That's personally. And secondly, I'd say, like, take your time, like, visit, you know, go for a week, go for 2 weeks, come back, go for a month, come back, go for 3 months, come back. Like, that worked really, really well for me. I've never, ever had the whole I'm leaving party.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, I've just gone for longer periods of time. Mm-hmm. So I just say, take your time and have a why.
Yeah. I remember when I was, like, I saw, like, quite a few friends, like, at this art event that a load of us organised in Leicester. And at the end of that, I was saying to everyone, I'll see you in 2 months. Bye. I'll see you soon. Yeah. And then never went back. So sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. And then just, like, you know, but you never know what's going to happen, really. And everyone's journey is different. There's no, like, prescribed advice you can really give to anyone.
No.
You know,
it's mystical, isn't it? Because don't wait to see the whole staircase, as they say. Like, all you need is the first one or two steps, and when you get there, all kind of things will happen. You know, like what you said, when you go, oh, you happen to be at this event, and then you saw. It's, like, to me, that was just there waiting for you. Like, that's not a coincidence to me. I don't believe in that. I believe that everything's, like, positioned there waiting for you to happen. So if it's meant for you, then everything will line up in its place. So just have the I suppose the drive to do it, and then have your faith, have a bit of faith, and know that mystical things will happen along the
mystical
way.
Mystical things.
They will, trust me, when you make a big move like that.
And lastly,
how I met my partner was similar to that as well. We met completely randomly at an art event where he came up to me speaking to me in Hindi, and I was, like, really, really nervous and struggling to reply because my, like, language ability wasn't great then, And then after that, like, you know, like, just twist of fate, isn't it? So, you know, sometimes, yeah, things are just happen like as and when they're supposed to.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. The last thing I want to ask you guys is, so what do you miss most about the UK, apart from family?
Obviously. You. We miss you.
I know. Apart from me.
Yeah.
Oh, I was literally about to say family before you said, like, apart from family. I miss Greg's.
Yeah, I was going to say, after family, it's food, right? There's certain foods. Like, Ghana's got amazing food, really good food. But sometimes I'm like, I could really do with a greedy cow today. Or I could really do with, you know, a particular, like, pie and mash. Like,
oh, I've been like, yeah.
But that's when you haven't had it.
Just bland and baked in the oven.
Exactly, sometimes. But I think definitely it's got to be family. But I say miss, it's made me value family more. Like, even though I haven't seen, don't see you guys, like, what my friends and family mean to me now has definitely increased in value. They don't, you know, it's when you don't have it around you so freely,
yeah,
you then really think about what you know, how important they are on the days that you really would love to see your family but you can't, or they're not around. Gosh,
it's like that, you know. I mean, I'm really lucky. Like, I'm very blessed that, like, my mom and my dad go back and forth.
Yeah.
Now, because they're both retired and they're both helping to run, like, a community education project in their locality in Faridabad, where our family home is.
Aww.
I do, like, thankfully, like, get to see them, like, you know, it's not like I'm away all the time. But with my sisters and my nieces, like, I really, really miss them loads. Like,
I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And my friends as well, like, because I had, you know, some really, really good friends here, like, still have. And being back and, you know, making the effort to see those people, because, you know, you can't see your friends all the time. Like, you live in a different country. So then, yeah, it almost feels like the relationships and friendships and stuff that you have, like, become stronger, because you know that you can live in a different country and still have connections with people. And obviously some connections, like, dissipate and some, you know, stay strong, and then you just have a better idea of, like, who your friends are and stuff. But yeah, I really just enjoy the time at the moment with my nieces and my sisters and that, because you do miss them a lot.
And so, do you think you guys are there for good now, for the foreseeable future? Am I going to have to spend all my spare money on plane tickets, basically, is what I'm saying?
At least one. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying I'm there for good, because what being in Ghana has made me realise, and being here today has made me realise, is that we and the internet, going back to the first story, has made me realise, is that we're in a global world now.
Yeah,
I think I don't really see it as I live in Ghana, I live in the UK. It's like I can be here, I can be there. But Ghana, yes, is for the foreseeable future and probably for the rest of my life always going to be part of my, I think, habitat in one way or another. Right. So but that does not mean I'm not coming back to London. I can still see myself at least coming to London twice a year. Like, I thought there was going to be a time where you're just not going to see me for the rest of the year. I just can't see that happening. And it just may be for shorter stints, sometimes longer stints. But yeah, I think for what I've built in the country, and I want to visit other parts of Africa as well now. So it's not just about Ghana. It's also about seeing if I can extend my purpose, what I believe I'm doing, into other parts of the continent as well. You know, just continue to inspire my nieces, my nephews, my friends, my families to perhaps, like, follow in those footsteps and see the world as bigger than just London, UK.
Yeah, I mean, same. I wouldn't say anything set in stone, you know. I'd be reluctant to say, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna be in India for the rest of my life, because, I mean, I would never have said I was gonna move to India ever. If you asked me 3 years back, I'd be like, what are you on about? Of course I'm not gonna move there, like, why would I? But now I live there, so you never know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, I always think, you know, wherever I'm in a place where I'm able to do things that are productive and, you know, helpful to like the field that I want to like be in professionally and the society that I'm in, like if I can do something productive and positive in regard to that, then that's where I'd like to be. And of course, like I am like in a like a long-term like relationship at the moment, so that plays a big part in it as well, like of course, like can't deny that. So yeah, I mean, it's like just wait and see, keep trying to do positive things, and then hopefully like it's in hands of God and fate to some degree as well. You just have to roll with it, don't you?
Do indeed. You do indeed.
All right then, my lovely sisters, I'm going to say bye now. Thank you so much.
It's been amazing. Thank you for having us.
It's been so nice. Yeah, when I should probably like have this conversation like off this chat, but like, of course, yeah, if you're still in England, like within the next 2 months, let's like meet up.
That'd be nice. What, are you still staying for that long? I'm going back on Tuesday.
Are you? Oh my God. Yeah. I'm working in an accountancy firm for 2 months, just earning some money.
Get the pounds in. Yeah, that's another thing I'll say. Get the pounds in. So are you are you here then still in August, roughly?
I'll be going back on August the 1st.
Oh, we're going to miss each other.
Oh, listen, you come to Ghana with us, and then we go to Ghana.
Yeah.
Like, so love to one day. Like, definitely, it'd be lovely.
We'll make it happen.
And if you ever come to India, you know, you've always got somewhere to stay.
I'll come for you, girl. Come for you.
You've been listening to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. I really hope you enjoyed this special episode of the podcast with my little sister, Ian, and my little sister-in-law, Kossi. I called her my big sister-in-law because she's actually 6'1", model height. So, if you've enjoyed this, please subscribe. And if you've got anything to say, please leave a comment. Until next time, take care.